Welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Austin. I'm joined here with Charlie.
What's up?
And this week we are going to be talking about social gaming, and we will get into exactly what that means in just a moment. But I'd like to start out with just mentioning that we have been doing our gaming event in Chengdu for 2 years now, and we have done 75 events.
This will be the 75th event in 2 days. 2 days as of this recording. Actually, so by the time this is published, then we will have just hosted our 75th event, which is a lot of events.
Yeah, and we have learned a lot about, you know, gaming in a social medium and what works and what doesn't work. So today, just with coinciding with our anniversary, we wanted to talk about what we think social gaming is and what how gaming can be a social event to bring people together. It doesn't have to be this alienating event, but it can be something that brings people together. So I'd like to define what is social gaming in the tradition.
Like Farmville.
Right.
Farmville is like the perfect social game because you can request other people's help on Facebook and then they can come water your crops, and that will reduce the amount of time to... That is not the type of social gaming that we're talking about.
So not, or not even necessarily, you know, playing Counter-Strike together, although we do enjoy doing that.
Yeah, no, we're talking about putting games into an environment where there normally are no games.
Right. So our weekly event is about playing at, currently at Berlin House, a bar here in Chengdu, and sometimes getting people who do not play, who don't really ever play games, to come and enjoy playing games with us.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to see people who aren't gamers or don't consider themselves to be gamers, and they're in the bar and they're just hanging out and they're kind of seeing that we're playing games or that there are games, and you can see that they're interested by it and they're like, oh, that looks cool, that looks like fun, like I like games, you know. And it's like, hey, why don't you come play? Like, oh, no, I can't.
I don't play games.
Couldn't possibly do that.
I don't know how.
Right.
You can tell that there's sort of a barrier there. For some people, they have a...
It's apprehension.
They have an idea of what gaming is and what kind of things they need to overcome to play it. And they think that the game is going to be a lot more challenging than it possibly is.
It's nice to see that when that barrier is overcome and someone's just having fun and they're like, oh, like I'm in a bar playing games. This is wacky. And it is wacky. And that's kind of the point.
Yeah. We typically try to pick interesting games, I think. And sometimes games that have a little bit of a shock value to them, such as genital jousting.
Right.
That got a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, we should state right off the bat, like, kind of what is the criteria? So I'm looking at a list of events. The first one was on May 13th, 2015. And it's pretty ironic that right at the beginning of starting to do this event, we picked two of the best games that we've ever played, Nidhogg and Broforce.
Yeah.
Which pretty much meet, I think, almost all the criteria
that we've like lined
that
up
we've
for
developed
since,
yeah. over years. But basically,
retro aesthetics, local multiplayer, independent games with a retro feel.
Yeah, so we're looking for games which are local multiplayer games where you can have multiple people playing, two or more, up to eight people playing at once, and games which are usually visually striking, that are good for spectating, because most of the people in the bar are not going to be playing the game, but it's just going to be like a game kind of in the background.
Yeah.
So ideally something which is easy to pick up and play. Accessibility is a huge factor. Something where you don't need to be experienced or need to be told too much to be able to enjoy the game.
I mean, so, we pretty much teach people how to play as soon as we put the controller in their hands and do it in such a way that they can hand it off to the next person.
Yeah. So, but I mean, looking at this list of games, we've had a lot of games where it hasn't worked out so well. And in a lot of those cases, they're like fantastic games. They just don't work for that kind of environment.
I mean, in a previous podcast, we mentioned Worms, and that is by any means a bad game.
It's for the two of us, like Worms is like the principal example of like a game which is a great game, but like doesn't work well in this case. What happened with us? You can explain what happened with Worms. What was the problem with Worms?
Oh, I mean, it was due to being a timed turn-based game. It would basically be explaining to someone how they play, and by the time they start getting a grasp on it, their turn would be over. And it was just basically, you know, like a whole bunch of people having no idea what they're doing. One or two people there know what they're doing, but it's not enjoyable for them because there's not a good competition.
The problem is Worms is not accessible enough.
Yeah, it's
you cannot put like Worm. You
too difficult to
if
learn.
If you just have casual players who are playing and you give them Worms, they're going to like just be jumping in the water and for a half an hour.
And it's time consuming. Another game that I think is great is Crawl, but it's like a 30 minute match or something.
Right, right. So we're looking for short duration of play sessions so that the controller can be circulated and that a lot of people can have a chance to play the game and experience it.
Right. You need to be able to pick up the game and understand the game in less than a minute. And then the matches should be 3 to maybe 5 minutes at max, I think.
Right.
As soon as you get into the 5 to 10 at mount, there I go with that.
There
thing.
You go.
As soon as you start going 5 to 10 minutes, people in a bar setting or in any social setting where games like Crawl or Worms, games that are longer, you know, sit down sessions are awesome. If you have 2, 3, 4 people meeting up at a friend's house for an evening of gaming together, if you've got a group of people, they're going to lose interest within, you know, 5 to 10 minutes and move on to the next bar or go sit with their friends.
And I mean, you just don't really want a small number of people just to be playing games all night while other people can't participate.
It's boring.
Yeah, a really big part of the event, which we do, and I think every successful like social gaming event like this, is the participatory nature, where anyone can come and they can interact with the game. The fact that it's interactive and everyone has a chance to play and to share and spread the enjoyment is like a really crucial feature of the event. So, starting, we've already mentioned Nidhogg. I think this is like one of the perfect games to mention because the game is so damn simple. Yeah. It's just two fencers. Everyone can see and understand exactly what's going on. There's no explanation required, really, other than one person's trying to run this way, the other person's trying to run that way. That's about it. And the game is just entertaining and fun to watch just with that.
With the whole tug of war mechanic and everything, it gets really interesting thinking, oh, you're close, and then having a turnaround. People who are watching are like, oh shit, whoa, man, yo, he's coming back around, you know.
It's, you know, like, another good one that's similar, Gang Beasts.
Yeah, like, oh, you pull yourself up at the last minute and somehow manage to pull a guy off by his foot.
Yeah, that's a really good spectator game. Funny to watch. It's a lot of physical comedy in Gang Beasts.
Yeah, that's not a good one. I mean, the visual nature of the game is a huge component, just as much as, you know, the ability to pick up and play and understand the game. The aesthetics are a huge part of it. Gang Beasts is incredibly comedic to watch. It's silly. You've got people just falling on the ground because they think it's funny. They're not even participating in the fight. They're like, you got Heist over in a corner stuck to a box or something, and you're like, what are you doing? And he's like, I don't know. Then someone else like throwing people all over the place. It's, I don't know, there's not very many games out there that really have that kind of
physical comedy.
Yeah.
What do you got on your list? You got a list of games. What are you looking at there?
So, yeah, I put together a few games that I think work and what doesn't work, and a couple of notes as to why I think so. And maybe we could just share, you know, a few thoughts on each game. So, this week, we're playing K-Tain, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
Yeah.
And
really? I think that's the one that we played the most, maybe?
Yeah, this will be, I think, the fourth or maybe the fourth time we've had it officially at an event.
Yeah.
And everything else we've typically done once, maybe twice. And
this time will be in VR, which is exciting.
Yeah.
This is the second VR event we've done.
Yeah, really cool to have people supporting. So, and that game, I just found out, has mod support, which is kind of cool.
New bomb types.
Yeah.
Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, for anyone who doesn't know, is a bomb defusal game. It's a two-player game where you have one person who's the bomb expert who has a physical manual filled with instructions, and the other person is defusing the bomb. And it's simulating a scene from the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves.
One of the mods actually does that. You have to drive a car while you're disarming the... Or a bus while you're disarming.
Man, that, we might have to look into that mod. That sounds really good. It's the scene. There's a specific scene in the movie between Jeff Daniels, who's on the phone with Keanu Reeves, and he's holding the phone to his ear, and he's got a manual. And he's like, "Do you see a red wire or green wire? Like, okay, how many switches are there?" And Keanu Reeves is like explaining to him the particulars of the bomb, which is attached to the bottom of the bus, which is on. And so they took that scene from the movie and made a game out of it. It's just a fantastic game. And one of the things that is so much fun about the game is the sense of urgency between the two players.
Yeah.
So the timer is ticking down, and if you don't complete the mission in time, then the bomb explodes, and it's like a really tense moment. And the person who's the expert is like furiously flipping through the manual trying to find the relevant location. Yeah, and you can't see the bomb. So it's just a fantastic game and really like one of the best games we've played at our events.
I think what works about it and what makes it so interesting and appealing to such a wide group of people when we bring it out to an event is the asymmetry of the game.
Yeah.
You know, it is not a normal game. It almost blends between a tabletop game and a video game.
Also, having the physical manual is really fun, not only to play, but also to see. It's a really kind of a spectacle. Keep talking and nobody explodes. I mean, you see playing the game and you're like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah.
You know, because they're like, one person's like, I don't know how many, you know, there's like these kind of like misunderstandings. And you very frequently have like people kind of yelling at each other. Yeah, it's like very
like
tense.
I told you it's six wires, or like I don't know. It looks like a weird tree dick thing. I don't know.
It's a tense game. Yeah, that's a good one. To see people just struggle over communicating these things is pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it's good for relationship counseling or something, I'm sure.
I wonder how this time will be different in VR.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. So what I'm thinking will be important, though, is we're having it set up so that the whole bar can still see the bomb. Otherwise, I think it'll be boring and like uninteresting. You won't have the tension.
Totally. So, but I mean, how does that work? So we have the laptop, which is hooked up to the
projector,
HTC Vive, and the projector.
And right, then we have someone on the Vive, the VR, over by... obviously by the laptop. I mean, we're gonna have it probably hanging wires somewhere, and then have the other person with the bomb manual set up, you know, somewhere where they can't see the projector. So we'll figure that out.
Cool. But, looking forward to it.
That also another game with a very, you know, similar line of communication with Space Team.
Yeah. That was a really, really funny game. Yeah. Very similar.
And also a lot of yelling.
But yeah, so that's a mobile game. We played that with a couple of Kindle Fire tablets. And it's a game where you're kind of like, how would you describe it? It's like Starship Enterprise. It's like a Star Trek type game where you're like at a control panels for a spaceship.
Which are randomly generated every time and have ridiculous...
technobabble.
Yeah.
So each player has access to a panel of fictional controls on a spaceship, and you have to communicate instructions to each other. So if the two of us are playing, then I'll say, turn the turbo nozzle to 6, and then you'll be saying something else ridiculous. But these are all instructions.
We got to go through a black hole. Everybody turn their phone upside down right now.
Yeah. Gorgle nozzle to 8. And it's like you have to follow the instructions, you're like struggling to not just laugh at everything.
All of the little slip ups I have while I'm talking sometimes, pretty much that happens to everyone. So another one, we're doing the tournament.
You know, real quick though, before we get off Space Team, you know, one thing that is really difficult about that is that it requires a lot of hardware.
Yeah, so, I mean, we do a lot of local multiplayer events, and we look for ways to incorporate as many players as possible with the least amount of hardware. And I think one thing that we found does not work well is doing things like LAN. You know, I mean, we went to a Hearthstone tournament. Hearthstone is a great game, but it's like alienating. It's isolating. Yeah. Everybody's tuned in.
It was really shocking, actually, that one event, because we had been doing CGF events for a year or so, I think. And we had this opportunity to do a Hearthstone event. And we both enjoy Hearthstone.
Yeah, at that time we were playing it quite a bit.
Yeah, so we did this event at a different venue, and everybody just brought their own device. Some people used phones, some used tablets, some used laptops. And it was like completely different. It couldn't have been a more different vibe. It was also in a venue, which is not ideal for this. It's like everybody was just by themselves. It was like this real feeling of like isolation and separation.
Even more so than, like, you know, I brought up Crawl. It's even more isolating than that. Because everybody
there's much
is
more. There's
zoned in on their own device.
There's physical distance between people. It just created a totally different feeling. But I guess it served as a good contrast.
Yeah.
To say, like, this is what it's like if you play games which are not well suited to these local multiplayer kind of, you know, vibe that we've been curating for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, we've got our tournament coming up in a few weeks that we've decided to go with Towerfall. And that's going to be great. And I think one of the things I would like to highlight in what makes that game so perfect for this type of atmosphere, for bringing people together in a social atmosphere, is that it has possibly the best handicapping mechanism I have seen in any game.
Yeah, it is really good. It is really good. The shield mechanism.
The shield and limiting your ammo that you begin with.
Yeah.
So it really can turn the tide. I mean, somebody who is not as skilled can go and rush you and have the upper hand just because they're rushing you at the beginning of the game.
It results in a lot of close matches. But actually, now I'm kind of like, since you mention it, the tournament mode in Towerfall is that which does not have the shields.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, I think that's fair. We're doing a tournament, you know, so that's fine. I think people can warm up and not have the shields. We can have revives on, which could be cool.
But yeah, the game, it's a fantastic game. It's an archery game. It's a retro pixel art independent game.
I love all the little details and the animations and stuff too.
Like, really, really just a tremendous game. Obviously one of our favorite multiplayer games that we've played in the last couple of years.
Matt Thorson?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's
developed by Matt Thorson.
Got a new game coming out soon. Celeste, I think, on the Switch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, really cool. So one of the things that we found and has completely changed my views with games is that we've found that sports games work really well in this setting. And I did not enjoy sports games that much as a kid.
They're some of the best multiplayer games, you know?
Without a doubt.
I played a good number of sports games. I was not like a sports game fanatic, but I mean, football games, I played NHL 94, which we just played recently, Sega Genesis night. I played NFL 94 also, had Joe Madden on the cover. NBA Jam, play that a bunch. NFL Blitz, play that. I mean, generally, the more arcade sports games were the ones which I enjoyed more in my youth than like the simulation games. I didn't play like FIFA or anything like that. Yeah.
I mean, I think having a nice balance between being arcade.
I think they have to be arcade at this type of event. I mean, a lot of people have asked, like, oh, when are you guys going to play FIFA? Yeah, it's like, well, if you have a game night, obviously you got to play FIFA. It's like, yeah.
I don't think
we don't really have to do that. Yeah, it doesn't really fit the criteria. The thing is, someone who knows how to play FIFA, and there are a lot of people who are really good. Yeah, no, someone else is not going to have a chance. It's just simply too many factors. I mean, the game is very complex.
I mean, we're pretty good at games, and we've lost quite a few of the tournaments. Me especially.
Most of them.
Me especially. I've won.
We together, between the two of us, we've won a small minority of tournaments. Dan's won more tournaments than you have.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone's probably done more. Vass has won more than me, I think.
But anyway, I mean, I think the point you're trying to make is that a lot of these games are accessible, but still doesn't guarantee that someone who is skilled at the game is going to win.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So with that said, I think there's, you know, like I said, sports games work really well. We need a certain arcade type feel to them. Being able to pick up and understand the game in less than a minute is important, no matter like how cool the game is. You can't, you know, just go off your feeling and be like, we're going to play Crawl tonight and make you sit here and watch us for 30 minutes. And sometimes with some games, we have had to like modify the rules a little bit with how we play, you know, change timers or things like that. But yeah, I don't know. I think also quirky titles like Push Me, Pull You.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, Gang Beasts that we mentioned already, General Jousting, and Mount Your Friends.
Yeah, that's a good one. Those are all good ones. Those are all similar.
Yeah.
And they're just like...
really weird.
Really kind of perverted looking, you know, bizarre games. They command the attention of everyone in the room, put it that way.
Yeah.
Mount Your Friends is like, what the fuck is this game?
You're like, did you just get a dick shoved up your ass? Like, what the...
what? Are you General Jousting? Yes, that's the point of the game.
Hold up to consent.
It's like that game is just made to produce the most socially awkward situations possible, and it just completely lives in that space.
Yeah. One other point I'd like to point out is that we meet every week and we try the games out before we go there. We've had a couple instances where things don't always go perfectly, but for the most part, we put a lot of work into curating the night and picking games that go well together.
Well, I think the idea for a long time was we'd see a game and maybe one of us would play it and we'd be like, oh, it's a cool game. This will work.
Yeah.
And then we'd play it.
And then we'd have worms.
And or just has some kind of problem that we couldn't have seen just playing it single player, or sometimes even with just two of us playing it, we wouldn't have that great of an idea of like how a crowd of people would respond to it, or how it would work with new people playing it, and how we would communicate the rules of the game to people. Those things can be difficult to predict sometimes, so it's definitely a skill that I think we've had to develop, and we still haven't perfected it. But meeting every week to test games out and to think about what'll work and what would be fun for us and fun for other people has really been a valuable exercise.
I think a good example of where things went wrong, an unintentional mistake that turned out for the best in a situation where we couldn't have predicted how things would have turned out, was not being able to get four players to work for the Power Stone 2 tournament, which would have been... insanity. Power Stone 2 is pretty wild and crazy, and it worked out much more interestingly being two players.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, emulators are a whole nother deal, too. So, when we're playing an indie game on Steam, that tends to be a lot easier. Yeah, so with emulators, there's so many different factors. And we haven't done the emulation podcast yet, but we'll do that. And we'll get into some of those issues. But basically, when you're dealing with emulators, there are a lot of considerations that you have to make sure that the game operates correctly, that all the functionality is there, that there aren't glitches which break the game, that runs at the speed that it has to run at. I mean, there's all kinds of potential problems which can emerge. Just tonight, we were testing out games for a future event where we're going to play PlayStation 1 games, and we're working on GPU upscaling to improve the graphics in the games, because at their native resolution,
they look
terrible. They look really, really bad. I mean, it's like 320 by 240.
blown up
to like 120 inches. And it just makes it really kind of not fun. So we are using RetroArch to upscale the games and trying to improve some of the graphical performance of these PlayStation 1 games. And it's a real challenge. It's like a whole process to it. There's a lot to learn. And for each console that you emulate, there's a different set of rules and procedures, and each game is actually different. Some games work really well and some don't, and they all have peculiarities to them. So there's a lot to that. So with the Power Stone 2 tournament in particular, that's a Dreamcast game. We were emulating that with D-Mule, and that is like an even more finicky emulator than most of them.
Yeah, but that time it worked out.
Yeah.
Worked out for the better. So, do you have any other games you want to bring up that are noteworthy, that worked particularly well, or you think did not work well?
Yeah, so I think it's more useful to talk about the ones which did work well, but we have a quick way to list the ones which worked the best.
Yeah.
Those are the games which we've done tournaments around.
Yeah.
So we've done, I don't know exactly how many, but something like 180 games in total, I think. And we've done 23 tournaments. And the tournaments are all examples of games which kind of meet all of the criteria pretty much.
Yeah.
They're all good looking games. They're all good to spectate. They're all accessible. Many of them are classic games which are revered by a very wide audience in the broader gaming community. And some of them are kind of quirky, interesting games which would cap your attention in a social place. So I'll just go through some of these games. Towerfall, Nidhogg, Clusterpuck, which is like air hockey.
Yeah.
Samurai Gun, Mario Kart, Rocket League, Street Fighter 2, NBA Jam, Lethal League, Super Smash Brothers. This is an example. Super Smash Brothers is like not a super... I mean, it's accessible, but someone who's just like picking up the game is not going to have a chance against someone who's really good.
Yeah.
And that's kind of just a compromise that we made for that game. You know, we knew that...
I think occasionally for tournaments, we do compromise that a little bit. Street Fighter is a good example as
absolutely.
Well. And Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Andy, I mean, last week talking on the podcast, and he pretty much... We knew from before the tournament was even, before anyone even showed up, that he was at least vying for
sure.
You know,
that's this is how it goes with doing this, you know.
But I think the tournaments, you know, are more interesting to watch. So we're willing to kind of people.
Also, Super Smash Brothers or Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, these are absolute classic games, which, like, if you're hosting tournaments with games that are retro games, these are ones like you have to do. These are like on the short list of games that you would do first.
Yeah.
And for good reason, because they're very competitive. There's a great amount of strategic depth in the games. They're super exciting games to watch. And you don't want to miss that just to give, you know, somebody a chance to like walk in and have never played any game and like win a tournament. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Bejeweled tournament.
Yeah, there we go. Angry Birds. That would be really, really...
boring.
Whack.
Yeah.
So I'm going to finish this list though. GoldenEye N64 007, Soul Calibur, Super Bomberman, Mario Tennis, Super Mario Strikers, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, Power Stone 2, Super Puzzle Platformer. That one's a real mouthful.
There, right there too. Yeah.
that Super Puzzle Platformer is also one of the ones that I feel like kind of like one of the weaker tournament games, I think.
Yeah, it was a fun tournament, though. You weren't there. A lot of people stuck around for that. It was because the nature of the way you were not here for that tournament. I hosted it and decided as we were getting into it to do...
it is a great
We game. Had enough time, and it was not a lot of people. It did happen to not be a lot of people that night, and so people stuck around, and we did a score-based tournament where each person... Instead of doing the two-player mode, we saw how far could you get, and we had head-to-head, and is a rule to keep it, each person, we decided to give an extra life. So if you, like, fucked up or whatever, you can try again if you want.
Well, it was a great game.
So, yeah, and that ended up being a really fun, competitive, casual tournament that was interesting and fun to watch, and it, like, was a nice... You know, different stray away from like the typical stuff we usually do. So,
also on the list, NES World Championships, NFL Blitz, Pac-Man, and our most recent tournament, which was Mortal Kombat X.
Yeah. So, really good games. Yeah.
So, before we wrap this up, what have you been playing recently?
Luftrausers. going back and playing an old, what is that? Vlambeer.
Vlambeer, right? Absolutely. Yeah, Dutch indie gaming studio.
I had a friend come over this week, and he just wanted to check out some old games I had on my computer. We just stayed up. We were drinking a bit and just like went through different games on my Steam library and spent a good amount of time with that. And then I did my like favorite thing in the world, which is to get someone to play Stanley Parable for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's always super fun for me to just be like, all right, I'm not going to tell you anything. Check this out. And he played for probably about maybe 40 minutes before he was just like, okay, I need to take a break.
Such a good one, though. That's really, really just one of the best on the short list of best games of all time. I'm glad that you mentioned that in our recent podcast.
What about you?
The one I've been playing is the game which name escapes me. It's the Dr. Lungus.
Oh, Dr. Langustov.
Dr. Langustov.
The Stanley Parable, Davy Redden game, right? The
Stanley Parable guy game, yes.
With, you said it had Justin Roiland doing the voice acting in the game.
You know, I did not notice that. I mean, that's what I think Wikipedia says, so I'm pretty sure it's accurate. But in any case, yeah, that game, it's very short, it's very weird, it's very surreal, and it's very self-aware. And so it's very much like Stanley Parable.
Cool.
It's a free game. And it's totally worth checking out. 100% worth checking out.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
You should totally buy that.
Hey, I mean, you can't miss it. It's free, right? It's similar to Stanley Parable in a lot of ways.
Cool.
It's very funny. It's very self-aware.
Would you say it's like
super bizarre?
Is it like kind of? I mean, like the beginner's guide is a little bit more, I would say, linear without giving away too much in comparison to Stanley Parable, though. Would you say it's more like that?
Man, I love the beginner's guide.
I love the beginner's guide as well.
It's much more like the beginner's guide.
All right.
It's completely linear.
All right.
Stanley Parable is
kind of
choose your own adventure. Yeah, with many different endings. Speaking of which, Stanley Parable, have you ever seen the PewDiePie video? He had a series of videos which popularized Stanley Parable.
Really?
Yeah.
I
he played it when it was a Half-Life mod.
Whoa, and I've been thinking about going back and playing that. Have you ever played the demo for Stanley Parable, which
no,
is totally different?
Yeah, I've heard
from
that.
The Stanley Parable.
I would like to play the demo, actually.
It's also good. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you very much for listening to this podcast. You can listen to the rest of our podcasts on iTunes or on Stitcher or on our website at chundugaming.com. You can also check out our podcasts, which are made into videos, on our YouTube channel. If you search for Chundu Gaming, that'll come up. And thank you very much for listening.
All right, later.